The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
In the wise words of the artist known as Tiffany, I think we're alone now. There doesn't seem to be anyone around except for the people around me, because this is Beyond episode 579, and I am your host, Jonathan Dornbush. I am joined by Brian Altano.
Where does this come from?
Max Scoville.
Tiffany didn't write that song. That's a cover.
I know it's a cover, but it's stuck
it's
in my
song.
Head.
Is it cover from Umbrella Academy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and Andrew Goldfarb.
Hey,
Andrew. Going to the Beyond Facebook group, we're going to start off the show right here. Patrick Jacobson said, you better have Goldfarb on. And there's a reason for that, Andrew. Why don't you take it away? I don't want to steal your announcement.
Oh, I'm leaving IGN next week. This feels familiar, but this time is different. Well, I mean, I think.
What? You always say that.
What a proper way to say it.
Next week is my last week at IGN again, but this time, I know it's a little different. I actually didn't realize until someone pointed out this morning that I was here way longer this second time than before I left. Because I was there from 2011, 2014 the first time, and then
it probably just feels that way because you had to work with me this time.
It's like a full year longer. No, that was the best part.
Really?
It made it go by so fast.
Aw.
Sweet.
Yeah, so this is good, right?
Yeah, and I have a new, I'm not just like, I didn't like get kicked out the door or anything. I have a new thing lined up that I can talk about hopefully next week. If not,
we'll
I'll probably just tweet it out right after.
But wanted to have you on, obviously, because we'll only have a few more weeks with you here to have you on every week. But as you've been my boss for the last almost 3 years, thank you for everything.
It's also, amazing. It is crazy seeing the number 579 because it's been like 300 episodes.
Do you remember your first episode number?
I would have to look it up. It was, it would be somewhere in the twos, I think. Okay. I came to 200 as a fan, but it's somewhere in the twos. Yeah, but okay, and then obviously I was here for 300.
Yeah, and hopefully you'll be back for 600.
Maybe, yeah. That's the thing. I can't say what my new thing is, but I think it allows an opportunity for me to eventually be back in the show.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
Why'd you point at me?
Max is my new boss.
You're taking care of Peppers.
Personal assistant. Yes. Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. Job.
Of course, beyond Andrew unfortunately leaving us, we do have plenty of things to talk about this week. Mm-hmm. First of all, we're going to talk about the fact that Brian and Max, you guys have been playing Far Cry New Dawn.
Yep.
I haven't gotten my hands on it. I played a bit of Far Cry 5, but I'm interested in the tone this one is taking. But first, before we dive too deep into it, I want to just get a general sense of how you guys are feeling about it.
Uh-oh.
A general sense.
I like it a lot. Like it's more Far Cry, and that's great if that's what you want. If you're burned out on these games, don't touch this. It's pretty much identical to everything you've played before. There's a couple minor touches this time around that are exceedingly doofy and fun and sort of bend the rules and logic of the world a little bit. But for the most part, this is a direct one-to-one recreation of Hope County map from Far Cry 5. The story has been moved 18 years forward after the events of Far Cry 5, which were very explicitly spoiled during the Game Awards, which is like a really interesting ending I liked that they sort of just like tossed away.
It's post-apocalyptic-ish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But really, it's the same map, so it's not that different.
It's got about like
some stuff.
Sort of 10% annihilation. Where things
flowers.
Are flowering, colorful, and the
white deer.
Yeah, the animals are reskinned to be a little more weird and interesting.
Bit mossy.
Anything have two heads?
No.
No.
That's too much to
That's the thing. Like, they actually didn't go far enough with that side of it. Mm-hmm. And I sat down and I started playing it and I kept saying to myself, oh, this is a really cool new area. No, it's not. I've been here before. I was here 11 months ago.
That's the weird thing about it being that close together to Far Cry 5. That I feel like, cause Primal is obviously the same app as 4, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
But they were further apart, or at least they felt further apart.
There's a huge difference visually.
This feels too soon. It's also, like I said, unabashedly a reskin of Far Cry 5 and a direct sequel to that, but it's also a budget price game. It's $39.99. So, like, if you want more Far Cry and you want something bigger and meatier than the DLC that they dropped after 5, but you're not ready, you don't want to wait another year or two for their next game. This exists. I found the story to be like just irredeemably bad.
Really?
It was just like it bordered on parody. It was like it didn't connect with me in any way. The world itself is a goddamn blast.
So that's
where I'm really torn on this game.
I don't skip cutscenes.
Yeah.
I usually just like kind of politely let them play and then check my phone and pretend I'm listening. I skip the cutscenes here.
Yeah.
Wow. Is it the dialogue? Is it the characters themselves? Like the acting?
A little bit of all the above. Okay. I mean, the weird thing is like, I wasn't wild about Far Cry 5. I think because I always like Far Cry because it is this kind of like bizarre sort of like, tourism where you're like, oh, you're going to a crazy wacky island or the Himalayas or whatever. You're going some faraway place. And then they were like, Montana. And I was like, it's America kind of, you know, I haven't been to Montana, but there's enough stuff that I think that
game was for people who live in the Himalayas.
Right. Which is, I mean, that's an awfully like, I don't know what the
somewhere so different than
American version of Eurocentrism is, but be like, I live in America. I see America all the time. But I think that it has this issue where because everything is sort of familiar, I notice the things that are inaccurate.
Yeah.
The parts that are the most video gamey. Like, I've never been to like, I don't know, the South Pacific islands, like whatever the hell the island from Far Cry 3 was. I've never been to anywhere like that. So that was like, whatever parts of that were video gamey, I was just like, it's all wacky to me. It's fine.
Yep, sure.
But for the American part, I was like, you know, no, they wouldn't have a barcade here. This is, you know, completely ludicrous. Like, it's kind of almost a locative ludonarrative dissonance, like based on my own personal experiences. But in this case, they were like, it felt like kind of a half measure where I like New Dawn better than 5, even though it was a familiar map. And they definitely lightened up on some systems, like flying vehicles are much less of a thing. There's like a handful of helicopters. Are there any flying missions?
There's an entire subset of flying missions that aren't directly connected to the campaign.
Okay. But yeah, unlike 5, which had like a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the weird thing about this game is that like you unlock fast travel almost immediately and you can spend perks on leveling up everything. Everything feels like a stripped down, even the UI and everything is a stripped down version of Far Cry. A lot of the crafting is gone. A lot of the sort of exploration is laid out in front of you. There's not really a lot of mystique in terms of like how many animals are in the game. Like there's a menu for that. Everything's there.
Something I really don't like, and you know, you get what you pay for with a sort of budget price, like watered down version. I always love the weapon customization in Far Cry.
Yeah.
And like you'd get different, like, you know, you got to kill 5 badgers to get a new stock for your rifle or whatever. Mm-hmm. In this case, every gun is like its own sort of unique loadout.
Yeah.
Like it's not like you can't swap parts in and out. It's just like, oh, you now get a tier 2 gun. It costs this many parts to upgrade.
Yeah, you can upgrade your sort of like ammunition and your running speed and stuff like that. Some of them forever. It's just basically like ticking it up 1%. And so like there's a lot of stuff about it that feels like stripped out and slimmed down and repetitive and the borderline obnoxious. But it's Far Cry, and I love Far Cry. And I spent the first few hours of this game being like, this is too soon. Mm-hmm. I don't need this. And then
you kept playing.
And then, yeah. And then 3 days went by and I was like, oh, I put 25 hours into this game. I stayed up until 4 o'clock in the morning one night playing the Outpost, which I'm an old man with
a
kid.
You're a father.
Yeah. I don't do that anymore. And like my wife came in and she was like, what are you doing? And I was like cackling maniacally at the screen. I was sending in like, I was doing that thing where you go to an outpost and you throw in bait and a cougar attacks a man and then you have your dog and then you snipe another guy and you blow up a tower and someone's like, huh? Like, and it's just so much fun. And then they hear you and you go crazy and you shoot everyone and they call in choppers. It's so fun. I love it. No, it's great.
But it's totally junk food, comfort food, right?
That's exactly it.
Like, it feels like when you get like a giant bag of Doritos or something and you're like, I shouldn't have this many Doritos. I don't need this many Doritos. I should have something. I need actual food, but you keep eating it and you're just like, I'm going to eat the whole bag.
Yeah.
I
appreciate how much of like a video game it is a lot. And also the fact that like the outpost system this time around is really cool. So you can take over outposts. And by doing that, you get like this fake chemical called like methanol or something that you can put into your camp.
It's totally a real chemical.
Is it?
Yeah. Ethanol is alcohol that you can run a car with.
Because like you can also use it to build a health store.
Right.
So
it's anyway. Yeah.
So you have this hometown called Prosperity, which is so it is like cartoonishly labeled. Like everything in the town is just like the way someone designs a lemonade stand. Like it says like weapons, grenades, helicopter.
Like the backwards S.
Yeah. And it's just like wooden slats with white paint that just say health. And you're like, oh, I guess I got to go there for health. Because I think they made it first, and they were like, no one knows where anything is. And they're like, make it very clearly defined. And it's just obnoxious
at the top.
And they
clearly defined it. Yeah.
And so you take over an outpost. You get a bunch of this chemical. You bring it back home. You upgrade your shit. And then you go back to that outpost, and you can just keep it as like a store that you have in the wild, which is pointless because you can fast travel anywhere, or you can scrap it, and then bad guys come in and take it over again, and they're tougher this time. And you can keep doing that for all 10 outposts, so basically you have 30 outposts to play, and they keep getting more and more difficult, and you get perks and more chemicals for like doing like headshots or for like taking out everybody without getting caught, and that stuff is a blast.
They do something really cool where when you scavenging?
Yeah.
When you scavenge something, if you can do it infinite amount of times,
yep.
But it'll change the position of alarms. I think you said that. Is that right?
Yep.
Which is great because it entirely changes how you approach the mission, depending on whether your gun's blazing or not.
Yeah, and so you can keep playing outposts over and over again, which are the best part of Far Cry. Everyone knows that. And you can go in and they are randomized and the placement of characters is randomized and your attempts can be randomized. And so it starts feeling more and more fresh. The problem is after a while, you run out of things to buy and to upgrade. Mm-hmm. And I did all of this stuff. I did all the legendary hunts. I did all this other stuff, to not touch the story missions. Like the story missions were lava to me in this game. I was like, I don't want to touch them. I don't want to go near them. The more I did of them, the more they kept shoehorning me into all of this. Like there's, I don't know who out there loves the shit in Far Cry where they're like, hey, I know you love running around an open world and like blowing up bisons and things going on fire, but what about a highly scripted drug tunnel where it's like Shangri-La and you can't move, you have to walk.
So there's things again. And they're like, those are never
simulators. And
I don't know what focus group was like, this is the part we should double down on.
They keep putting them there.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
This game to me feels like, you know that game where you take a piece of paper and you fold it three ways and you have each person draw a different part of, like, one person draws the head, one person draws the body. This game feels like that, where one person is drawing like Saints Row 3, one person's drawing The Last of Us, and one person's drawing like The Division.
Yeah.
And the end result is like this weird kind of Frankenstein. And that's a AAA game in 2019. It's a lot of people pulling in different directions.
Yeah.
And it is sort of an experimental, almost like budget price sort of
add-on. It's a weird AAA game in that.
Yeah.
It just, the problem with Far Cry as a franchise is that it was too good too soon.
Yeah.
They knocked it out of the park. Like, I think Far Cry 3 is a borderline perfect game, and everything gameplay wise that they, could have improved upon, they did in 4. And then anything they could have done tonally to sort of mix things up, they did with Blood Dragon. Mm-hmm. And then from there, they were like, Primal?
Plus other games.
Five?
Like, I was obsessed with Far Cry 3, and that kind of fell off of 4, and I didn't even touch 5. And I think part of it, and I didn't touch Primal either, I think part of it is that other games just stole the outpost system. And like, you know, if you're really into like hunting and skinning things, you can play Red Dead. Like, there's just so much out there right now that I feel like, you're kind of right. They kind of suffered from being too good too early. And then everybody, including Ubisoft, kind of took their own ideas.
Well, they also, like, they're incapable of really landing on whether they want to be serious or stupid. And they do both. And that's fine. But I wish they went all the way in one direction.
Yeah.
And I wish they went all the way stupid. That's where I want them to go. I want them to go
so close.
Like, is that going to lead more towards that?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that you ask, are there two-headed animals in this game? And we're like, no. And it's like, well, then why?
Yeah.
What's the point?
Yeah.
Like, even Primal, it's like, are there dinosaurs? No, there aren't. like Blood Dragon. Like, that's the closest it got to going really insanely over the top. And in this game, like, there's a double jump. You get a you're a human adult person.
You get this thing called like Eden's Gift, which is basically just superpowers, because I haven't even gotten to the part in the story where that happens. Yep. But you can do like super punches where you punch somebody, then they just fly off, yep, just disappear. Double jumping just breaks the game in the best way possible.
That's crazy.
And Max and I played, we did 2 hours of co-op for a stream the other day, and it was utter cartoon nonsense. It was an absolute blast. Like, we were punching proximity mines, like blowing up goats and all this fun stuff like that. And like, I love all that, but this game was also like, it brings you down like Jacob's dark path, and like, you meet the twins, and they're like, they show some backstory of when they're kids and how, you know, growing up was hard. And you're like, stop.
Well, all the best stuff you guys are talking about is so disparate from how they initially pitched Far Cry 5. Especially of this like very serious politically driven game, and then the game came out and got a lot of flack for not really taking a side once it presented the politics existed.
Yep.
It didn't really go beyond that.
Well, and that,
it's also I mean it's also weird because it's we're so sort of accustomed to what a post-apocalyptic game is.
Yeah.
And I think there's definitely a space, I would say The Division does it really well, where it's like, what does a sort of post disaster type thing look like?
Mm-hmm.
But this feels like, I don't know, Fallout on a budget with a style guide that didn't want to go too crazy.
Yeah.
Like nothing, I mean, there's a radiation zone where when you go into it, like a fog appears and it's like, get out of the radiation zone. I don't know what happens after
totally
that.
Totally annihilation.
And there's like there's like more flowers everywhere.
But
that might as well be
an invisible wall that's like, we didn't finish this area.
Yeah. And it's like, there's not like a, you know, there's no like rads per second like in Fallout, and there's nothing, like people aren't full Mad Max. Everyone's sort of like a little bit like, X Games meets Mad Max.
Especially if it's only been, 18 years, you said? Like, that's not long enough for any... That's a weird setting. I think it's especially weird when it's going to go up against Rage. Not really directly, but Rage is sort of this other, like, brightly colored post-apocalyptic, half-humorous, half-serious game.
I feel like is built from the ground up to be, like, a neon Mad Max.
Yeah.
Whereas this is sort of like, let's take this sort of quasi-political commentary on the Far Cry system. I don't know. I don't want them to gut Far Cry
because
so much great shit there, but I want them to like I would love a $40 Blood Dragon.
Yeah.
I don't know why they can't. They keep being like, but close to that? No. Oh, are we doing this or not?
Like, no disrespect to the people who've written Far Cry games, but I want the next Far Cry game to start with story. The bad guys are here. Finn. You're just like, and then it's just like, bonus points for killing them as creatively as possible. And all of the years that you spend in writing and mocapping cutscenes and stuff like that, you put that into fire and animals and sharks and grenades and like sword guns.
Also,
and
I'm sorry, where the fuck are the bees? They have bees in 4. The bees are gone.
There are no bees.
Somebody went into the settings of this game and they took birds and they brought them down to like 2, and they took bees and they brought them down to 1. There are like 3 beehives in this whole game.
Really?
They're there. Yeah, there's one on the bridge.
Is that tied to a trophy? Find the beehives.
Give me f-ing sharks with laser beam eyes.
Yep.
Give me dogs that when they bark they shoot bees out of their mouths.
Yep.
And give me a f-ing deer that has guns for antlers.
If you told me that was a Far Cry game, I'd believe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that's the thing. It's like, I think you nailed it. They have to like pick a tone, you know, because like, and that was the criticism about Far Cry 5, the main game, was it set itself up to have all this great commentary about, you know, the current state of America and like the kind of like this like idea of like the Midwest, and didn't do anything with
it. This was perfectly primed to be a goddamn open world Idiocracy game.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, and that breaks my heart.
I know. They're so close. They're so close.
I mean, but that's the thing is, again, bag of Doritos. I'm still having a fun time with it. I'm still like running around and like the story isn't there for me, but it's a playground, which is at the end of the day, like this is a sandbox game, which is adjacent to the playground.
Well,
there was cat shit in it.
There was that like year back to back where we got a reboot of like God of War, Breath of the Wild, and Assassin's Creed. And then we came in to this studio and we did every show, and every idiot in our chair in the world did the same exact thing where they're like, what franchise should be rebooted next? I don't want to put Far Cry into that conversation because like you said, I don't think it's broken enough to like start to scrap it entirely. I don't think it's tired enough. I just want them to like focus on the best parts of it, cut the fat, and just make a ridiculously over the top sandbox,
especially for a $40 game. Because I love, you know what, like even when it doesn't work, I like that they're doing weird stuff and trying kind of a smaller, less than AAA scale to come out and be a little bit of a smaller game for a little bit cheaper. Mm-hmm. Like that is a good goal moving forward, but it sounds like they just need to swing really far in either direction.
Yeah.
Like if you're gonna make, like the thing about Blood Dragon that made it so successful is that it was so different. And you know, they tried to make, they made like Trials Blood Dragon. Like, oh, they didn't really, they continued that Trials brand in the way that like people didn't really want them to. But I think if they just experiment more and more, they can easily do something cool.
And yeah. It sounds like it needs to be pretty bespoke. Like, you can kind of tell the seams of where they patch things onto Far Cry 5.
Yeah. It's so crazy because like Ubisoft Montreal, like, they are, or at least were for the longest time, the flagship studio for Ubisoft. And like, obviously Toronto has made amazing games. You have a lot of other studios doing stuff. Obviously Massive has taken off, but like, I don't know, like, they have the talent to do whatever they want. This feels like it's more of like a like brand limiting thing. Mm-hmm. And I wish they would just realize that Far Cry isn't really a consistent brand anyway. So just
it's
get rid
called
of it.
Far Cry. It means like a giant leap from the last thing, basically.
Yeah.
It's weird because honestly, since 3, the basic sort of fundamentals have stayed pretty much the same.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's always like almost like the thrill is always, oh, what's the intrigue here? Like, you know, who is Pagan Min? Like, who are these sisters? Like, who's, you know, Jacob Seed, whatever. And then you play it and you're like, that story's all right. And, you know, good performances and everything. But mostly I just want to run around and shoot beehives and set people on fire. Yep. And then it's always like some weird kind of shuffling around of stats and skill trees and items and how that stuff comes together.
And crafting and all that. Yeah.
And in this one, it feels the most sort of, I feel like the most kind of watered down, or the most like
stripped down.
Yeah. Not watered down, but like, one thing that really bugs me is the damage system feels like more like RPG-ish. Like, you've got, it has the damage numbers popping up, mm-hmm. which I really hated.
Why is that in this game?
I don't know.
Help you in any way?
No, not really.
I mean, there are parts where it felt like The Division, where I'm like shooting somebody with a shotgun and they're just like chipping away at them, and I'm like, you're a guy. You're a guy in a shirt. Just die.
More arcadey or something?
I don't know.
My theory is like, Voss was a really cool villain in Far Cry 3, and it sounds like they've tried to just like replicate that in each of the games. They're like, start with a big bad and build around them. And it seems like what they really need to focus on, I think you're right, is gameplay. Mm-hmm. Is like, get the core of the gameplay stuff, and like, it would be fine to not have a big bad or have it be like various pockets where you're fighting, take down like 8 enemies or whatever it is.
In this game's defense, they do have one really cool thing, which is expeditions, which is effectively like, everyone kind of makes a big, you know, hullabaloo of the fact that this is the same map from 5, but they have basically this weird Cajun man with a helicopter at your base who's like, I will take you on expeditions wherever you want to go. And he'll take you to like a nuclear power plant, a carnival, Alcatraz. And they're basically giant outposts that you can go and screw around in.
And they're all post-apocalyptic, which is cool, because it implies that the explosion in Hope County at the end mm-hmm. of 5, spoilers if you didn't see the Game Awards, was big enough to like take out Alcatraz and a
Alcatraz
bridge.
Alcatraz looks exactly the same as it always has.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a wreck.
Just kind
it's,
of yeah. same.
But those are really fun because you like fly in, you land your helicopter, you go to this beacon, and then you pick up this like, you know, MacGuffin basically. And as you're leaving, it ticks off a GPS system. So all the bad guys, even if you've been stealthing the whole time, are like, there he is. Mm-hmm. And they go chasing after you while you wait for your helicopter to bring you in. You can play them at different difficulties. It's really fun.
Those are also awesome in co-op.
Yeah. And it gets you out of, like, Max and I did Alcatraz together, and he was like sneaking along the beach, and I'm standing on the roof just throwing meat into the ceiling. And I'm like, I hope the bears come and scare everyone.
But what about the politics of the world, Brian?
Yeah. They're deep.
How did those dirt bike people get on the island of Alcatraz?
I don't know. That's a good question. But they start calling in boats and all this.
It's really fun.
That's cool.
Bottom line, end of the day, Far Cry is a very fun video game.
It's still fun. Yeah. I don't think Far Cry is going away, even though like, they're misgivings about it. It's just, I agree with you all. Like, it needs to pick a point of view.
It needs to be as dumb as we are when we play it.
Yeah.
The
most succinct way I can say this, and I don't want to take money out of anybody's pockets, but I don't know what you're doing this weekend, but go to your local grocery store and put $5 in Redbox and get this game and just mess with it all weekend long. Like, it is the perfect – it is, like, just a fun toy. Do a bunch of expeditions. Yeah. Do a bunch of outposts, and then bring it back to the grocery store.
End of the day, Far Cry is just some of my favorite video game times, where it's just, like, around junk food nonsense sandbox island.
Yep.
Where you're just, like, throw the meat, the bear's going to come, but he's going to catch fire. Time to shoot the bees and get the saw blade gone. It's just – I don't know.
Well, like, on the alternative side of this $40 more budget-priced game that it's a sandbox thing, play for a week and have a blast with that sort of stuff, we have also coming out this week Anthem. which is
the polar opposite.
Which is the polar opposite, and like right now it is in that weird EA Origin Access. Yes.
That game isn't coming out this week. That game came out 2 weeks ago. It's coming out this week. It comes out next week, and it'll also be coming out the week after that.
Yeah. And in six months when they release an update. So right now,
happy fourth release date.
Yeah.
Anthem is in this weird place where it is available through like EA Origin Access Premier for PC players.
Right.
You can play 10 hours of it on Xbox One. If you have EA Origin Access, you will be able to play it in full on PS4 this Friday. Mm-hmm. It's in this weird, weird release schedule, but in these early times of people playing it right now, we've seen a lot of issues people are running into. It will have a day one patch on the official launch day of this Friday of the week we're recording this episode. And one of the big problems people are running into are load times. There was one example of a Redditor put a video up of them waiting 7 minutes for a mission to load. And they were like able to go up, do whatever they need to do for 7 minutes, come back. We're seeing all these problems from the beta or the, was it a beta or an alpha? The VIP demo launch thing that they did.
I think they literally used the word demo.
I think it was VIP demo. Mm-hmm. Even though I think a lot of people approached it as
it was
beta.
So
we saw all of those things. We're seeing this also in the case of Apex Legends also just launching from EA. And I guess the first question I want to pose to you guys is there room for a game like Anthem to launch right now in the industry and succeed when it is facing so many problems at its launch like this?
I think if you're going to come out and try and steal away some of the Destiny crowd, which is like, let's be real, that is like kind of the ghost that every publisher is chasing right now, is sure. Like, mm-hmm. How do we get a game that's going to have this like committed audience that's like a hub world and it's always online and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I think if you're going to pull people away from Fortnite, pull people away from Destiny, you have to come out really solid. And especially if you're BioWare, who has had kind of a tough time with their last couple of games, like
a tough 7 years.
Yeah. So I think, like, yes, they can do it. I think this game could have done it. It needed to launch a little stronger. And I think, like, now they're at, like, a really crucial point where if they're really, really good right now, if they address all the problems, if they keep updating it, if they give people a reason to stay, I think Anthem will do great. People are obviously interested in it. But, like, they really could drop the ball right now. Like, they're really in sink or swim mode.
The problem is with these, like, with this sort of, like, you know, multi-tiered release date system is that when your game is not finished, but you figure out a way to monetize the unfinished version of your game to the audience. That is great for your back end as a publisher developer, because you can get a bunch of people to pay for early access for a full price game for $60 or pay into some tiered structure for a subscription service. The issue with that, though, is that unfinished game gets judged by the populace at large, and it gets reviewed by game journalists, and it gets reacted to by streamers and influencers. And so your Metacritic is now effectively crushed from the jump, and all of the YouTube videos are out there being like, Anthem has 7 minute load times. You know, this is not just like reviewers and critics are ruining games and all this crap. I think game journalists have a basically antiquated perspective on putting a score on a game that isn't finished, but they are judging a product that is out available right now and doing what they do best. And so are influencers, so are streamers, and everyone is taking this product that is, you know, not finished yet, that's getting a day one.
But
what is
the day one patch a week
also,
after?
Right. To be fair, though, like, this wasn't like an early access thing like for 6 months like a lot of other games. This is 1 week early, you know. The people, like, they weren't going to change that stuff by release day.
The like devs at BioWare would not like to have that game out there in the state for a week when they were playing that day.
I agree.
Patch for that.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not saying you're blaming the BioWare.
I'm not saying
it's this weird publisher developer divide.
I think everybody probably loses in this scenario. Yeah. I don't actually see any winners here, and that sucks. I think gamers are getting access to unfinished product early. I think reviewers are scoring something that still needs work and is still getting patches. I think like influencers and streamers are playing something that's broken, and I think the developers are walking out with egg on their face. And there's maybe some CEO at the top that's like, we figured out how to get $20 out of some kid early who wouldn't have given us anything. But I don't think there's any winners here.
That sucks, the part where people pay money to get on this thing that isn't ready yet. I also think that that's like, I think it's asinine to give a numbered score to something when it's just fresh out of the oven. I think that this is like, I love Kotaku's review score where they're like, yes, no, not yet.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
yet. This is definitely a not yet thing, as was the case with, I don't know, Destiny, Overwatch, PUBG, Fortnite, like all of these massive games, they need to react to their community. Mm-hmm. Like you have to put them out in the wild and see what happens. And like they're reactive games. So for us to be like, the game is out, it is a 7 out of 10. Like who is that helping? Yeah. Like, we need to patch our reviews if that's the case.
If Anthem can sustain itself in 6 months, that game will probably look pretty different than it does.
I mean,
well, and especially
I did the VIP demo. I went to, full disclosure, I did a sponsored shoot for Anthem, and I was sort of like, I hope this works. I hope this is okay. And it was, it was me and three other, influencer host people playing together on a public demo, which was definitely a shaky thing. We had like a full like studio crew, and we did have some issues. That was, of course, the demo where it was like, we're having server issues. This is a living, breathing online thing that requires, some technical hiccups. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm glad it worked out. It came out okay. Obviously, seeing this thing like out in the wild, I'm like, I want to play it. I want to jump back in there. But I've learned my lesson from so many of these these shared world experiences where you got to wait for the dust to settle.
Yeah. And they get if you look at Destiny and Destiny 2, actually, they kind of stumbled out of the gate. And then their first big expansion was what won people back over, think. And so Anthem's been pretty good about making it clear they're going to support this game. Like they're in it for the long haul. Mm-hmm. I think EA and BioWare both.
They said 10 years, right?
Yeah. We're going to see big changes, and it's just a matter of if they're the right changes. That's the thing. If the updates are great and frequent, and if the first expansion is well received, it's like way too early to be like, oh, well, that's it for Anthem.
Yeah, of course. I don't want to declare Anthem dead right now, because I personally can't wait to fly around Iron Man on an alien planet.
Yeah, I definitely want to play it.
I think the thing for me is what do you guys think? Obviously, the day one patch will not solve every problem. What can BioWare do well going forward? Because I'm really impressed by the way Respawn's handling Apex Legends right now.
Yeah.
Over the weekend on their Reddit, someone from the team, forgive me, I'm forgetting his name, his or her name, but they mentioned that they are looking to do daily updates on that Reddit thread to tell the community what they're updating, what they're addressing, mm-hmm. what they know is an issue. And obviously that front-facing idea, having someone to be able to have those conversations, is important. What do you think BioWare should be doing, knowing there may be issues that persist?
Well, I think the thing is with Apex is that that core, the fundamentals of that game were cooked, right? They were there. They were ready to go. And then anything you add on that, if you decrease, bullet damage and increase bushes or whatever, that's all great to tell people every day, add new skins and stuff like that. I feel like with something like Anthem, Anthem is one of the six big AAA games that has launched in the last week and a half in February. And so you only get one shot with a lot of stuff like that, and you have to wait. Either I jump in now early and it's undercooked, or I wait 6 months and everybody's way better than me and I don't
I think Anthem's going to do better at that than Destiny has.
I hope so.
Just based on what I've seen with what they're doing with systems and stuff. There was a great thread that a couple people from BioWare were on Twitter where they were just like, let us answer all your questions. And this was before the demo was even up, and it was saying how they're doing a lot to sort of scale difficulty. And it seems in that sense, it's almost less competitive. It's more about everyone's kind of leveling up together than it is about getting high enough level for the raid or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it seems they're definitely sort of one eye looking over at Destiny's paper to be how can we improve on that? How can we deal with that? But yeah, I think this is I really want to play it. The flying around is awesome, but I'm going to wait until it's ready.
Yeah.
I'm gonna wait until it's done. I think it's smart to launch it in February because it's sort of there's no good time to launch something like this. Mm-hmm. But by the time a lot of people are looking at, buying new systems and new games and stuff this fall, it's going to be I think it's going to be pretty solid.
Yeah. And seeing a big update in the fall would be pretty likely. And they can address things, bring in new players, and also reward the players who have been there from the start.
I think E3 is going to be really interesting for them because, assuming EA is still doing a conference, I would guess it's going to be mostly about Anthem and Apex Legends.
Yeah.
It's a really weird spot to be in.
It's really weird to compare the two, though.
Yeah.
Because one, we found out about less than a month ago. And it came out, and everyone loves it, and it's free.
Yeah.
And the other one, people pre-ordered when it was announced at E3 last year, and everyone's like, don't pre-order yet, it's not ready.
The other thing is, Titanfall 2, I don't think did well commercially. It didn't sell super well, but critically, I feel like people pretty universally really, really liked it. And so, Respawn isn't really in the doghouse the way that BioWare was.
Yeah.
And so I think that, a lot of people, even if Anthem had come out and been the most perfect game of all time, I definitely think there would have been people who were just out for BioWare's heads already. Mm-hmm. And so, I do feel like they have a little bit of an uphill battle, but I want to see them succeed. I really man, did I love Mass Effect. I really would love to see BioWare kind of with this new Dragon Age they have cooking, and with this, I want to see that brand kind of bounce back a little bit. So I'm hoping that we're going to get a bunch of updates, and at E3 they're going to blow everyone away with whatever the first like big new change is, and it'll come out in the fall and blah blah blah. So we'll see.
What's interesting is this is sort of launching in the same window in the console cycle as Destiny did with last gen. Like it kind of Destiny sort of popped up like tail end of that was cross platform, right? That
was Destiny was I think the very beginning of
it was very beginning
it was like 2014,
but it was available that was out for PS3 and 360, right?
I think it launched on
Destiny
it 1 did on
so like obviously if they've got a 10-year plan, Anthem is going to be on next gen consoles.
That's what
the hell that means.
You know, the rumors that next fall, like 2020, is going to be when next gen starts coming out, and like there are a lot of these games right now, like a lot of things like don't survive that gap, you know, between generations. Like that's why like I feel like you see obviously Call of Duty is still, you know, the number two best-selling game of the year, of last year. Like, it did fine. But I do think it's hard to keep that going for years and years and years.
It's a totally different generational gap where, like, will progress of Apex and Fortnite and PUBG and all those things carry over to the PS5 and the Xbox, too. Like, that may factor into a lot of people's buying decisions and stuff. It's going to be a weird.
It really is. Like, this is, like, the most exciting time to cover this industry, in my opinion, like, as all the next-gen rumors start ramping
up. Good time to quit doing that.
Yeah. What perfect timing, Andrew. Andrew, moving on to something you can talk about.
Yeah.
Kingdom Hearts 3.
May your heart be your guiding key.
I know we've talked about it a bit here.
Yeah. But this is my first time talking about it.
We haven't had you on the show to talk about it. Brian and Max, if you guys want to take a nap for 5 minutes, I understand.
That's cool. Well, you listen to us yell about the Far Cry animals and the sharks and stuff.
Andrew, you haven't beaten Kingdom Hearts 3, but you're
I think
close
I'm literally
end.
At the final save point,
yeah, you're
right?
Essentially in, like, the final.
I'll beat it tonight. I think I have, like, 2 hours left.
So, without spoiling too much or anything, how are you feeling about it as a whole? As someone who's, like, played the series but not invested
in it. So, I've played Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 and most of Dream Drop Distance, and that's basically it. Mm-hmm. And when I told you that, you were like, you're not going to get, like, 80% of the stuff going on. You have to play Chain of Memories and Birth by Sleep. And it's like, I decided not to do that to see how confused I'd be coming in. And the answer is not very. I feel like it is so exposition heavy. I've been fine on plot because every time someone comes in, they like turn to the camera and be like, "You may remember me from such hits as that time Sora was asleep for a million years." And
a goofy
and, like,
movie.
Yeah. I mean, like,
which I incorrectly reviewed for IGN.
Yeah. Good job on that.
I do really like that it explains stuff to you, so I haven't felt lost. I think its age shows a little bit. We've talked about this privately. Weird word for that. But I think some of the earlier worlds, like some of the Pixar worlds, especially when you're in the Monsters, Inc. world or the Toy Story world, they look great. The textures are great. They really are, like, very pretty. But they feel almost like PS1, PS2 era games in that they are completely empty. Like, you're doing everything and everything looks good, but you never see an NPC. There's never, like, anything to interact with.
They're reserved to, like, cutscenes.
But then, like, Pirates is the total opposite of that. Pirates is huge and fully featured and really does feel like a modern, like, 2018, 2019 game. And so I feel like the work that they did from, like, a decade ago just crept into this game. It's really fascinating.
Interesting.
I am really liking it, though. I think the combat is so fun. Like, as more of a Final Fantasy guy than a Kingdom Hearts guy, I am very, I really do love that after battles, the way you're normally summon like Bahamut to crush everything, you summon like a carousel. Like I do think like the attractions work really, really well this time. Yeah. I love the Lynx. I think that was a really smart way to like get like some like cool characters in that don't have worlds this time. It's I don't know.
The faces on Max and Brian. Right now.
I find it very charming. I'm enjoying it.
No, but as you're going through, like you're getting to the end game of the story, with worlds being empty and stuff, some of them, and then some being more fully featured. How do you feel knowing the story somewhat, but having some gaps? Like, are you enjoying it or do you feel like it's,
I really am
pacing?
The individual stories of each world for the most part are very good. The overarching story, I am still confused about where it's going. Like, there are a lot of things that they're treating as really big reveals that don't feel like really big reveals. But you told me I'm in for a gauntlet of cutscenes towards the end.
Yeah,
so
some big battles and a lot of long cutscenes.
Yeah, there are a lot of characters where I do remember them from Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, and I'm like, oh yeah, this does ring a bell. And then there are a lot of things I'm like, I don't understand.
Why is Marluxia here?
Yeah, or
Larxene.
Larxene.
All your favorites,
Larxene?
Yeah.
Larxene.
So the whole thing is that they're the bad guys basically are good guy character names that they add an X to in Scramble. Mm-hmm. So you'd be like Zabrian.
Zabrian.
So like they spent 20 years doing Pig Latin.
I mean, yeah kind of.
That's Zigbar last week is.
Well, you already have an X.
Greg is Zigbar. Yeah,
he would be Zazam.
That's a cool name.
Zazamax. Yeah. I have a question.
Yes.
And it's really weird because pretty much everything I know about Kingdom Hearts has been like via Twitter osmosis, where friends of mine will just like argue with each other about it. I'm like, what are you saying? What is that gif? And I saw somebody, this jumped out at me because I pay attention when things mention Winnie the Pooh. Mm. I saw that somebody said you don't need to mess with the Winnie the Pooh segment.
So I love the Winnie the Pooh segment.
The Winnie the Pooh has been quite contentious.
I'm just aghast that anything Winnie the Pooh could be divisive.
Minute optional world.
It's like a 30 minute to 45 minute, depending on how long you want to spend with it. It's like three or four mini games that you play through. And it's essentially like Pooh and his friends need your help. And each time you've been, Winnie the Pooh has been in Kingdom Hearts 1, 2, and 3. Each time you go into a storybook of Winnie the Pooh, Winnie and his friends need help.
The art style totally changes. You would actually really like it. It's like it's drawn like a storybook. It has like this weird, like almost like self-shaded-y kind of look.
But you don't need to finish it to beat the whole game. And
what are the mini games?
They're like,
do you have to get his ass unstuck from that tree with a hole in it?
In one of the older
cover yourself in shit and go on a balloon up in the tree to get the honey out of there.
Do you have to draw on his ass?
It's three farming games. It's like one where you collect all the vegetables.
It's all rabbit mini games. Rabbit's the worst character. Yeah. Really?
Well, some of them are like honey collection ones, like pick the proper fruits, but they're all essentially like match.
Is there one where you make Tigger jump higher than the trees?
No, not in this one.
But what about when you make Christopher Robin wake up and realize he has depression and these are his various psychoses that he's materialized as animals?
You're Christopher Robin.
Isn't that the Ewan McGregor
film? Yeah, that's just that movie. Yeah. That world's been really weirdly divisive. People are unhappy with like
the Keyblade's really funny because they have honey out of it. It's real gross.
No, Heffalumps are weasels. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
That sucks.
What about Gopher? Yeah. Is he there?
Gopher's there.
And it's all the original voices from like the animation.
The Keyblade's really great though because it's a collection of honey pots like essentially stacked on each other to make a key.
You shoot
that
honey
sounds
out.
Disgusting.
And that actually grosses me out. That sounds like a wasp.
That sounds like putting your mouth on a controller at GameStop. That sounds horrible.
Why don't they just have one of those big honey dipper things? Then you'd look like the Honey Nut Cheerios bee when you ran around with it.
Because when you transform your Keyblade from the Winnie the Pooh world, all the pots break apart and form into two guns that shoot honey at your enemies.
What? No.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And then those.
Well, Far Cry doesn't have enough bees for me. Maybe I'll be playing Kingdom
Maybe
Hearts.
Maybe you should play Kingdom Hearts. Well, one of the things I wanted
to
ask was.
I really don't think should have a gun.
He doesn't get one this time.
Okay, good.
Look for Kingdom Hearts 4, though. Harry Loizidis, I'm probably mispronouncing
Harry Loizidis. He's
excuse
awesome,
me.
By the way.
He's good, good man, yeah.
Asked, what DLC world would you want to see in Kingdom Hearts 3? And Andrew, you and I have talked actually a lot about like the DLC we'd want to see in Kingdom Hearts. That's why I wanted to.
I mean, it's funny. The Winnie the Pooh model, I think, would work if they did a quick 40-minute world. Not necessarily a storybook, but like a little bite-sized optional one. I think
100 acres or bust.
For something like that, I do think I'd want to see like a lot of the links covered the stuff I would want to see. Yeah. So like, and also previous games have, right?
But like Lion King's been in there, but if they return to it, I wouldn't be upset.
I'd probably pay $3.99 for Heffalumps, $4.99 for Woozles.
I think
you pay by the Woozles.
Lilo and Stitch is a fun one. Yeah. It's a weird thing because like if we're talking full featured worlds, that would be like major DLC. I think they would have to do something with a stronger story.
Yeah.
Which to me means like, something else with Pixar.
I would love to see them add like an Olympus Coliseum sort of thing. Like the battle gates at the end don't really do it enough for me. So
have they done Lion King?
They did in Kingdom Hearts.
They just talked about that. Yeah. They were just talking about the Lion King.
I don't know where your head went in the last 10 minutes, but it definitely wasn't where mine was, which was at a different table.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. Would there be anything that would get either of you to like want to play Kingdom Hearts 3 if they added a Marvel world or a Star Wars
Hell
world?
Hell no.
Wars,
keep that out of there.
Star Wars?
No.
No.
Goofy movie? Rescuers Down Under, The Black Cauldron, Man of the House.
Man of the House would be great. Yeah.
Chase, Jonathan Taylor Thomas killing gangsters.
I love these ideas, but you would put them so deep into something that I don't like that it'd be like putting a peanut M&M in a graveyard and telling me to go find it.
They would like, probably say,
you'd be like, oh, 30 hours in, you get to meet Timon and Pumbaa. And I'm like, but what do I have to do to get there? And they're like, well, there's a guy with metal shorts and giant shoes.
Oh my God.
And he has more buckles than anything in history. And you have to listen to him talk. And he's going to tell you stories that you'll never understand, even if you read 6 books and read 4 and played 40 games.
Look, those conversations only take like 20 minutes, okay?
It's funny to me because normally I'd be like, oh man, stop picking on Sora. But everyone in the game is as mean to Sora as you are.
Right? Yeah. Okay, I'm not crazy. I didn't want to talk about this pre-launch, but the game is really mean to Sora.
Yeah, Sora is every human character's names, right?
Yeah, Sora's every like the human main, is named Sora.
He's Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Still, Haley Joel Osment in his like late 30s playing a 16-year-old. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, when I beat it, I would love to talk about spoiler stuff with you at some point. Yeah, because I do like There are things I think it does really well. I've already kind of seen some of the post-game stuff that...
Do any Disney characters die?
You'll have to play.
Most of the parents die in Disney movies.
That's true.
That happens a lot in this game. I'm excited to talk more spoiler-filled details with you at some point, maybe before you leave, but we'll figure that out.
Winnie the Pooh stuff is super disappointing, you guys. I'm not going to lie.
I'm sorry, dude.
Thank you for honestly explaining what was up with the Winnie the Pooh things. I don't know. It's weird to see people arguing about the works of A.A. Milne in regards to a Square Enix game.
My favorite thing about Kingdom Hearts is the opening credits are... This is my favorite thing about Kingdom Hearts is in the opening credits, they always will be like, these characters owned by Disney, these by Pixar, these by Square Enix. But Winnie the Pooh is always separate. It is like a separate registered trademark than anything from Disney. So Winnie the Pooh will always get his like proper own trademark page.
So it's like when like a really reputable actor is in some indie movie and it's like, and
a lot
Winnie
of the Pooh. Smash Brothers is like that for a lot of things too. Like if you look at the bottom of either the Earthbound Mother Amiibo, it's like it's specifically credited Shigesato Sakata Otoi as it creating it separately from Nintendo.
That's really cool. Well, Andrew, we did bring you on. I want to jump into a trophy test. Because we brought you on.
Sorry about that noise.
Big Buck Hunter.
Yeah.
I made a Persona 5 trophy test for you.
Nice. Oh!
Because you platinum this game in both the English release and the Japanese release.
This is so much pressure because now it's like if I miss one, everyone's going to be like, oh, you fake gamer.
Yeah. So if you don't know trophy test, each week I come up with both real and fake trophies and ask the panel to guess which is the real trophy of those two.
God, I don't remember the names of so many of these trophies.
I'll give you the name and the description. Okay. So hopefully
are we participating in this?
You are both participating as well.
Oh, man.
The thing is, though,
killed.
Andrew has to go last each round. I don't want him spoiling what the answer is.
That's a good idea. So you two will answer first.
So I have six trophy duos here. Please tell me which of these is the real.
Okay.
Andrew, you are so stressed.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
Okay, the first is I Am Thou, the real trophy. I Am Thou is to obtain a persona through negotiation. Or Thou Art I, which is to max out the strength confidant social link.
One is real.
You're saying
one.
I Am Thou is real?
I agree with one.
That's I Am Thou, one. Andrew?
I agree.
You're all correct.
Yes!
Number one is the real one. Hopefully I didn't make...
Finish that game. I like those swamp horses.
So good.
How far in are you? How many palaces?
I got into the dungeon. I think I got through the first dungeon.
Okay, you get to the part where Winnie the Pooh gets stuck in the wall.
To the sixth
dungeon.
You get
to the part where Winnie the Pooh gets stuck in the wall.
I want to romance that.
You can only romance gophers. It's kind of a bummer. Okay, moving on. Is the city's big belly the real trophy? The city's big belly is to complete the Big Bang Burger Challenge. Or the city's hard hitter, which is to hit a home run at the batting cages. Which of those is real?
Two.
You're saying the city's hard hitter?
The baseball one.
Andrew?
Those are both trophies. I don't remember the names. It's probably the second one. I'll go with the second one.
You're saying
both trophies.
Both trophies. The city's hard hitter?
Yeah, sure.
There's okay. Another the correct answer is the city's hard hitter. Yeah. You all got that one right.
All right.
I did not do well on these.
I love that.
Moving on. Is... Around the town, the real trophy. Around the town is to bring a romantic partner to every hangout spot.
That's weird.
Or that's a weird thing. Drink fanatic to buy every kind of drink from vending machines.
Two.
Which is the real
one trophy? One is the real one to bring them to all the places.
Every hangout spot. Andrew, which
drink
one?
Drink fanatic.
Drink fanatic. The real one is drink fanatic. Sorry, Brian.
Damn it.
I remember doing that because there's two that are only in one vending machine in Akihabara. It's really...
See, I know this because... Persona is just the anime Yakuza.
That's fair. Yeah.
Or Yakuza is Persona for men.
Wow.
Ooh.
Moving on. Is full arsenal the real trophy? Full arsenal is to fully upgrade every gun. Or is under the table goods the real trophy? Under the table goods is to customize a gun. Is it full arsenal or under the table goods? Brian.
One is the real one.
Full arsenal?
Two is the answer that I pick.
Ooh. Andrew?
I know there's a trophy for customizing a gun, so I'll say two.
You both are correct. Sorry, Brian. Another one down.
It doesn't matter.
I don't know what that move is. I lost.
Yeah.
You can come back. There are two left.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on.
By myself.
Right now, Andrew and Max have 4 points. Brian has two. Moving on to the next one. Is craft worker the real trophy? Craft worker is to create all types of infiltration tools. Or crafting an obsession, which is to craft any item 30 times. Which of those is real? Craft worker or crafting an obsession?
Two.
Crafting an obsession?
The second one.
Max?
I'm going to go with one.
Okay.
One.
You are both correct. Craft worker is the real trophy.
I'm trying to throw my game as hard as possible tonight. Doing good.
What did I pick there?
You picked
make one of every
craft worker. Yeah, okay. Craft all types.
So I won.
You did.
Good. Yes.
Moving on to the final trophy. Is it power that connects, which is to perform a baton pass 3 times in a single turn, or avenging angel, win a battle with only Joker left standing alive? So is it power that connects, perform a baton pass 3 times in a single turn, mm-hmm. or avenging angel, win a battle with only Joker left standing alive? Max, I'm going to ask you first.
Mm.
Power that connects or avenging angel?
I'm going to say 2, avenging angel.
Avenging angel. Brian?
2.
Andrew.
Power that connects.
It's power that connects.
Yeah.
And Andrew, with 1 point ahead, you win.
Yay. That felt like cheating. It was also really hard.
I was wondering, how was it?
Yeah.
Imagine playing that game for 400 hours more than everyone and only being 1 point ahead.
I played like 10 hours of that game.
Yeah.
And you did pretty
Very
well.
Good game.
Yeah, you only lost by 1 point. Congratulations. Yeah. Sorry, Brian. You
oh,
lost
it's okay.
by a few points.
That's all right. There's nothing there that I ever would have wanted.
You know what sucks is I turn off pop-up notifications because we have to do like live streams sometimes.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And so I don't see a lot of trophies. And then occasionally I'll be like time to go to bed, and I'll like go to the home screen, and then I'll be like, what a strange trophy. Oh well, anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't try to hunt that stuff.
Well, that's what you're very good at this. Like I feel like
I check them constantly.
This is a potential like
a weird
future avenue for you.
I think so.
My
yeah.
Patreon for making up trophies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, that'd be a really cool job if you just went from studio to studio making up trophy titles.
Pitch some trophies.
Yeah. Like, please leave.
I just show up at the door.
You stand there and you're like, eat 70 eggs. The egg eater. And they're like, there's no eggs in this game. Get out of our house.
They got rid of eggs in The Last of Us Part 2.
That's true.
Thank you all so much for playing this weird game that I have spent way too much time making up fake trophies.
Anytime,
it's a
man.
Fun time. It's a fun time.
Brian, when you're not on Beyond, where can people find you? What are you up to?
I'm at Agent Bizzle on Twitter, and I'm also on Nintendo Voice Chat here at IGN.
Awesome. And Max, where are you?
I'm Max Scoville on Twitter and on Instagram. I've been posting pictures of all sorts of models and stuff I've been building. Ooh. I've been doing a lot of Gundam stuff lately, which I actually, full confession, that's something I really like in Anthem, is the robot customization is incredibly robust.
It seems really detailed. Dude,
and I just want to build Gundams in there. I want to make
the customs you've been posting have been so good across the board. Like,
thanks, man.
Like from the miniatures you're making to, I saw you did a Jules custom figure. Yeah.
You know
like,
that?
So good.
You know that, like, that Simpsons where, like, Bart can't see the Itchy and Scratchy movie, so he, like, reads the book? Like, I felt like that with Anthem, where I'm like, well, I don't have the game. I'll just build my real robot.
How long does, like, one roughly take you?
A Gundam?
Yeah.
I've been working on that one since 2012.
Okay. So
but I moved like 7. I don't know. It depends
how much.
You
have a room now, right?
Yeah, it depends how much time you want to spend on it. You can just kind of go insane and spend forever on one, you know?
Yeah.
If you want
to. Jules 1 came out great.
If you haven't already seen it, you should look on Twitter. Max made his dad a really, really cool like miniature version of his car. That was
great. That one's
amazing.
Getting
very big into totally unrelated to work hobbies. I do have a ridiculous model kit of the Metal Gear Sahelanthropus from Metal Gear Solid 5, which I will be doing bad things to at some point.
Feel free to bring it here.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what that last part.
Whatever. Yeah, whatever that
part. You're gonna do to it.
It's sex.
I am going to have sex with the plastic model kit, and then I will go to the emergency room.
Fair enough. Andrew, when you are not with Max making sure he's okay in the emergency room, where can people find you?
It's a tough visit to accompany you on.
You're his new personal assistant.
I'm on Twitter at IGN for life. No, I'm just kidding. I'm on Twitter at Garfep, and I think maybe I'll be on again next week.
Hopefully, yeah.
Or maybe a Kingdom Hearts thing. I don't know. I'll be around. If I'm not back, well, no, I'll be back. I'll be back next week.
So you're really like just teasing everything possible. And I am at JM Dormush on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you all so much for joining us for Beyond episode 579. Remember, episodes go live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com. And as always, Beyond.
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 Yeah. Beyond.
Beyond.
It's sex.
It's our new catchphrase.
That's the catchphrase.
Gold Farm's new show.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.